Alex Speer of the Boston Globe joins us, and he was being regaled by our understanding.
By you, yeah.
Yeah, by tied baseball games and blowing ground rule doubles. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm dandy. I'm delighted to be calling you from a train going back up from New York to Boston. So I apologize if I cut in and out while listening to Tide.
Nice.
No problem. What is the weather forecast for Boston this weekend?
I have not checked it yet. I have no control over the weather.
So we can't blame you for the weather. No, I was just wondering because
It's for David Ortiz filled skies, I suppose.
That's right. The weather is that it's David Ortiz Day, so it doesn't matter what the weather is. No, I was just wondering because there were a lot of reports that there might be a lot of rain and that. And the reason I was asking that is, how do you think John Gibbons, how do you think John Farrell goes about using his pitching in this series? Now, we know that it's Porcello, Rodriguez, and Price. But if Sunday's game is meaningless, if the Red Sox know that they're going to have home field advantage for Cleveland, would they just give him three innings? Would they not pitch him? What can we expect?
There's been some discussion of the possibility that they would that he would scale back the starter workload, which certainly makes sense. You know, Price did 225 innings for the year already. You guys know the gig about regular season workloads and what that can mean going forward. But John Farrell said that there's a chance that he would scale back the innings loads of his starters now that they have clinched the AL East a little bit. But he didn't commit to that by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, who pitches Game 1 for the Red Sox in the playoffs?
Porcello. Rick Porcello is the one who's on term for that. And Price, they're trying to keep Price on his turn every 5 days. So the fact that he'd be scheduled Sunday starter means that he would be the scheduled Game 2 starter for the Red Sox.
Is that surprising to you that he's not pitching, David Price is not pitching Game 1? Because like, you got to figure that's why they spent all that money on him, for him to pitch Game 1, right?
I think that in theory, if you had anticipated last offseason that David Price wouldn't be the desired Game 1 choice, I think that would have come across as quite surprising. Mm-hmm. I think that based on the relative consistency of Rick Porcello and David Price over the course of this season, I don't think that it's shocking. I do think that Price would actually be a totally worthy Game 1 starter. He has been very consistent in terms of the innings yield that he's had. But in terms of like runs allowed in games, he's been vulnerable to home runs. And that's not the ideal thing that you're searching for in those circumstances.
Last year, there was a lot of discussion in this city about David Price, and you touched on it, his postseason record versus his regular season record. You know, it was quite a story here. How is John Gibbons going to handle him? Of course, John Gibbons actually ended up using him out of the bullpen in a game. And I'm wondering...
And burning him for Game 5.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. What has the discussion been like in Boston, and how has David responded to it?
I think that it's been a challenging year for him to adapt to Boston. It is a very, very difficult market for a player who hasn't been playing in the most kind of insane day-to-day, game-to-game markets to adjust to. He has been held to a level of scrutiny that he's never been subject to before. So you'll hear him talk quite a bit about those who doubted, those who are, you know, those who don't understand. He's kind of put up a wall of, you know, he's presented an us versus them mentality in many respects in the way that he's talked about the city, which I actually think that's perhaps been part of why he's been quite successful down the stretch this year. He's figured out a way to survive the challenges of it, but I think that he's still feeling his way through the living in Boston experience, and I think that he's been subject to quite a bit of scrutiny during it, sometimes fair, sometimes not.
Yeah, okay. A couple of questions here. What's the biggest weakness you see with the Red Sox going into the playoffs? And what's the one thing that Red Sox land's worried about? What's the one thing that can derail the Red Sox going into the playoffs?
Well, I think that, you know, those lingering questions about whether or not Price's, you know, postseason history, the fact that Porcello has never been the postseason workhorse, loom over what they're doing, even though, again, I think that that's as good a one-two as there is among the American League postseason members. And then And then I think that there's still a little bit of looming uncertainty about the bullpen, which has been excellent for most of September. But when Craig Kimbrell goes bad, it goes really bad, really bad. So they're figuring that part out.
You know, how did this happen for the Red Sox? Because at one point, you know, we were talking about, well, David Dombrowski, it's not his guy. John Farrell's not his guy. This may not, it just may not work out. And God, now he's the American League East champion.
Yeah, you know, I think that one thing that's been really striking about how Dombrowski has gone about building the Red Sox is that this was not a gut job. He looked around at what existed and kind of trusted. He had a pretty high regard for what they had been putting together before he got there. And I think it's kind of to his credit that he didn't feel the need to kind of, he made adjustments and more and supplemented, but he didn't gut the operation. He was pretty open-minded, and he had actually, he quickly formed a great working relationship with John Farrell. They just kind of speak a very common language of, you know, long-time baseball men who kind of came of age in a relatively, you know, relatively similar time. Dombrowski's kind of, you know, maybe 5-10 years ahead of Farrell in getting him into the major league game, but they worked together very easily, and as a result of that, Dombrowski had quite a bit of faith in him from a pretty early point, even when the Red Sox were weathering some of their more tumultuous stretches of the calendar.
Yeah, now obviously the two guys in Betts and Ortiz, that's your MVPs, but you look at Hanley Ramirez. Could you think that this would be Hanley Ramirez's best season he's ever had? Coming off one of the worst seasons he's ever had, he's trying to play left field. You know, when you're trying to do something you're not used to doing, everything else suffers. That's what it looked like to me. And this year he just looks comfortable. He looks happy, and he looks sort of forgotten in a lineup. If you can say 100 RBIs is forgotten, he looks that way. Best season he's ever had? What do you think?
Not the best season he's ever had. When he was a super dynamic force as a shortstop for the Marlins, who was hitting like 350 in a park that was a graveyard, you know, that's better. Some of the things he was doing in Los Angeles were pretty extraordinary, although he didn't stay as healthy there as he has with the Red Sox. That said, I think that it's safe to say that, well, it was easy to forecast some bounce back, right? Like, he hadn't just, his career wasn't over after last year. And I think that part of his struggles last year were exactly because of what you say, his struggles adapting to left field and what that did to his confidence, as well as an injured shoulder. His bounce back has exceeded any expectations that I had for it. And he's become a very important lineup member, particularly for someone who's been one of the really elite September performers in baseball over the course of his career.